All right, so last class we finished chapter 26. What was the theme of 26? Simcha. That's a Hebrew word. What does it mean?
Joy.
And we specifically spoke about two sources of the opposite of joy and how to overcome those challenges. We spoke about, in very general terms, challenges that come from what we call worldly problems, problems of this world, meaning when life gets rough, and how to overcome that. And then we spoke about how to overcome challenges of a spiritual nature, which we defined as guilt over our past misdeeds, how to overcome the negative feelings that arise from that. Okay, so that was chapter 26. We're continuing now to chapter 27 to speak further about the importance of retaining a joyful mood and how to overcome various sources of angst. Today's particular troubleshooting issue is similar to what we spoke about in the end of the previous chapter, but it's different. Similar but different. It's similar in that, so at the end of the previous chapter, we're speaking about when you feel bad about past misdeeds, when you're feeling bad about things that you've done wrong in the past. Today, chapter 27, it's a similar source of negativity. It is spiritual in nature, it's moral in nature, it has to do with feelings of being inadequate in a religious way, but it's different. In fact, it's deeper because in the end of chapter 26, we're talking about feeling bad about things that we've done. In chapter 27, we're talking about feeling bad about things we haven't even done because they're not actual behaviors. They are proclivities or desires or attractions that we're feeling that we feel ashamed about, which is a much deeper issue. You might say that in the end of chapter 27, at the end of chapter 26, we dealt with guilt, and in chapter 27, we're dealing with shame. Guilt is I feel bad about what I've done. Chapter 27 is I feel bad about who I am. So it's obviously much deeper when I feel bad about who I am. I'm ashamed that I'm the kind of person who would derive pleasure or satisfaction from these things which my sense of right and wrong tells me shouldn't be the kinds of things that are exciting or interesting to someone like me. Okay, so we're dealing with that. We're not getting into a moral discussion of right and wrong. That's not the point. The focus here is the emotional issue about what to do with these feelings let me state it this way. Remember last class we spoke about the vicious cycle where the evil inclination will get a person into a rut, like a sort of negative feedback loop where I feel bad because of immoral things that I've done. And because I'm feeling bad, I'm looking for distraction or relief. And because I'm feeling bad, I don't have a particularly high opinion of myself at the moment. So then I indulge in order to distract myself from the pain I feel from the guilt over my previous misdeeds. And in order to distract myself, I indulge in something which is an even greater misdeed than the misdeed that I was originally feeling bad about. And then lather, rinse, repeat, you get stuck in a downward spiral, which can obviously be very destructive. So similar to that, in chapter 27, what we're saying is, it's so important to be joyful. You cannot do anything well, and certainly not at your best, unless you do it joyfully. And that includes serving Hashem. Mm-hmm. And if you so here's the irony. If you allow your shame about feeling spiritually inadequate to make you feel bad, then actually what's going to happen is it will compromise your ability to serve Hashem properly. And then obviously from there it's very hard to put a stop to that negative cycle. So what we're trying to do is give you some information that will help you to contextualize what you know about yourself so that you can be more gentle and forgiving without changing your moral code, because that would be the easiest thing. We could just become moral relativists, so we could tell you whatever you feel is good. If it's natural, just do it. But we're not going to say that. We don't have to say that. Well, we can tell you that, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong. And at the same time, you do not have to be consumed with shame over your desires, which are not aligned with your moral code. Okay? Does this make sense? Yeah? All right. So, Perichov Zayin, chapter 27. V'im ho atzvos eina medaygas haveinais. If the person's sadness is not from being worried about sins, meaning actual sins, the commission of actual sins, ella, but rather, what's troubling him? Mi hahihurim, or mi hihurim ra'im, but rather because of, let's call it, sinful fantasies, v'taivis ra'is, or lustful desires, sh'neiflis b'machshavte, which are popping up in his mind. In other words, he hasn't done anything. It's not like he says, oh, that was a terrible thing that I did. No, rather, it's much deeper. He's saying, I'm ashamed of the fact that these are the kinds of things I would like to do. No, I wouldn't do it, God forbid. But what kind of a lowlife am I that these things still speak to me and that I do get excited about them? And then I have to remind myself, oh, no, that's not good. And then I don't do it. But it's like, what kind of a person am I? I must be some type of a pariah. That and the worst thing is nobody even knows. If anybody knew, if they knew how bad that people, you know, people would spit on me, they would. But they don't even know what a hypocrite I am, right? So he's consumed with this type of negative self-concept, and it's causing him to be sad. And the Alter Rebbe is saying, nobody, you cannot afford that. Even though it sounds, in a certain way, it sounds sort of like noble almost. Like, like I'm so pious for hating myself for being so not pious, right? But he's saying, no, you're not doing anybody any favors. This is not productive. We got to get you off of this loop. Okay. Hine. Im neifle slay shalei b'shasu aveda ela be'eis oskei ba'asoka v'derech eretz akai gavna. If he has these impulses, not in the at the time when he's trying to actively serve Hashem, like learning Torah or davening, but rather when he's going about his day, when he's at work. And there's a distinction here because there are different ways of reacting depending on what activity you're in the middle of. If this happens while you're in the middle of davening, that's a whole other discussion, which will be the subject of an entire chapter unto itself, namely chapter 28. So just hold in there until chapter 28. But if you are going about your regular business, you are parking your car, you're running into the store, and you're just doing regular mundane stuff, and all of a sudden you get this twinge of self-loathing because you say, oh, you know, I thought I was so spiritual. I go and I learn Tanya every Monday at the Yitzchak Library on Central Avenue at 11 a.m. I thought I had progressed so far spiritually, and I just caught myself having an impulse which is not spiritual, an impulse for something that is totally abominable to me. And yet I had that impulse. You know, nobody came and told me to think about this. This came from my own brain, and I guess that's the kind of person I really am, and who am I fooling? Okay, so here's what he says. Adrabba, to the contrary, meaning you've got this all wrong, buddy. Yesh leili smayach bechalkei. You're sad? No. Be happy. Be happy. He's doubling down. Not only is he saying, don't be sad, he's saying, be happy. You thought Bobby McFerrin was the one who said that. What? You like that? Okay. You know the sense of betrayal I had when I found out that that accent was faked? I haven't gotten over that yet. That was cultural appropriation. Okay, so don't be sad, be glad. Sha'af sh'neifle sleibe machshavtei hu masichtaite mehen. Because, listen, even though you had this impulse, you didn't give in, you didn't do it, you averted your mind from it, eventually. He doesn't say how quickly, by the way, but yeah, eventually. Now you can say, well, no, what I did do it. Okay, so then go back to chapter 26, because in chapter 26 we deal with what if you've actually gone over the line and done something wrong. So we spoke about that in chapter 26. But here we're talking about the deeper issue of I haven't even done it, and I'm feeling awful about the fact that it's still attractive to me. It's still interesting to me. So he says, look, don't feel sad. Be happy that you had the desire and you didn't give in. You were Masiach Das. Masiach Das means you averted your mind from it. Lekaya Mashet Namar, so what? Because in so doing, you fulfilled that which it says. V'lei sasuru achre levavchem v'achre enechem asher etem zeinim achareihem. Do not go straying after your hearts and your eyes, which you go lusting after. You know where it says that? Where does it say that? In Shema. Yeah. So that's a biggie. It says, do not go straying. And in fact, it's one of the 613 commandments. It's not just a verse in the Torah that we say multiple times a day. It's actually one of the 613 commandments. Lei sasuru, do not go straying after your heart and your eyes. Ve'ein ha'kosev medaber batzadikim lekorem zeinim chas v'shalom. Now that verse was not speaking about tzadikim and describing them as having lustful desires. Now, stop. We have to go back to our basic Tanya knowledge. Not everyone here has been at every class since we restarted Tanya almost a year ago when we restarted from chapter 1. But those who have been here, or who have been here most of the time, please remind me, what is the Tanya's definition? Don't tell me what a tzaddik is. Someone will take you to the airport. That's not what a tzaddik is. The Tanya's definition of a tzaddik. It's behavioral. Nothing bad. What do you mean? Nothing.
No desires. It's all good.
Hmm? No impulses. No impulses. Right. So it's even deeper than behavioral, even on a level of impulse. Right. So the definition of tzaddik, according to Tanya, is someone who does not even have the kinds of impulses that one would be morally obligated to inhibit. A tzaddik would require no inhibition because all of their impulses are holy impulses. Doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. Yeah, maybe they did. Maybe they won the lottery. Yeah. Yep. Tall and handsome and no yetzahara. Yep. Yeah, just won the lottery. Yeah.
So innate.
It doesn't matter because this book will not tell you how to achieve that anyway. Yeah. Remember, I don't want to get into a whole discussion about basic Tanya, but Sefer Shalbeinanim, the Alter Rebbe called the book Sefer Shalbeinanim. He said, our purpose here is to become a Beinani. A Beinani is someone who achieves behavioral perfection in spite of having conflict on the level of impulse. Okay? But we're bringing up the tzaddik not to tell you to be a tzaddik, but actually to remind you that you're not a tzaddik and to tell you, you know this verse? Velesasuru, do not go straying after your impulses. Who is that verse speaking to? What kind of a person is that verse speaking to? Surely not a tzaddik, because a tzaddik doesn't have the kinds of impulses that would require being overridden. So this verse is speaking, well, rather, let's just continue. Ela bebeninim, kayetzebe. Rather, this verse is speaking to what we in Tanya define as a beinani. Sheneflim lahi hure niuf b'machshavte bein beheter chulu. Who do have thoughts of, and it's interesting, and I always make a point when I learn Tanya, especially with the young people, not that we're not young people here, but with the young people, I say, you know, there are a lot of thoughts that we are morally prohibited from engaging in. But the example that the Alter Rebbe uses here, he only uses one example. He says, Hirhure Niuf, which in my lessons in Tanya, I think is translated as erotic thoughts. And then he says, Bein Beheter Chulu, whether of a permissible nature or, and then he says, etc. He doesn't want to say it so explicitly, but the implication is, or of a prohibited nature. In other words, the Alter Rebbe is talking about any type of thoughts that you're not allowed to think about, like, oh, I'd love to murder that guy, right? Obviously, that's not a moral thought. But when he cites an example of the kinds of thoughts that you're not supposed to indulge in, the example he gives is thoughts of an erotic nature, whether of a permissible category. Do I have to explain what that means, of a permissible category? Somebody thinking about a relationship that actually is permissible to them and just thinking about it in an inappropriate time when there's nothing productive that can be done with that thought. Or thinking about something that is inherently not something that could ever be acted on in any place or in any time, right? So the Alter Rebbe is using that as sort of like the classic example of human nature. If you're not a tzaddik, if you're a tzaddik, you don't have this issue. But if you're not a tzaddik, sometimes you'll have an impulse for a thought of this type of nature. And goody gumdrops, lucky you. You were just given the opportunity to do a mitzvah. A tzaddik can't do this mitzvah. What mitzvah? V'leisasuru. V'leisasuru is a mitzvah. But you can only do that mitzvah of not straying after your impulses if you have the impulses to begin with. So this is what he's saying. You were beating yourself up. You were condemning yourself. And then you were getting depressed because you had the impulse for something that's inappropriate. He says, why would you be upset when you were just given the opportunity to do a mitzvah? Oh, you don't like that mitzvah? Oh, you don't like that mitzvah? Oh, now you're picking and choosing. So what are mitzvahs about? You're doing the mitzvahs because Hashem told you to do the mitzvahs, or because you want to be a cool guy, so you're picking which mitzvahs you think are cool? No. It doesn't work that way. The mitzvahs are for Hashem, and this is one of Hashem's mitzvahs. Oh, no, but I want to do the cool mitzvahs. So my mother could write a mitzvah note to the teacher. You know the mitzvah notes when the kids are in, like, kindergarten? You have to write the mitzvah note. He was such a good boy. He helped get ready for Shabbos. He yeah, because there's a lot of social pressure to come up with those mitzvahs. It's like, what did he do? A mitzvah, though, yeah.
I was at the Aleph before Rosh Hashanah, and mother walks in with her two little kids, and the boy's looking, wow, look at all the mitzvahs.
Oh, that's so
cute.
That is so. Well, I don't know if anyone heard online. You were at the oil, meaning actually in the oil where people go in, where the actual caver is. And a mother comes in with her with two little boys, and they saw the notes, the papers that people leave at the resting place in Lubavitch Rebbe. They said, oh, wow, look at all the mitzvah notes. That's good. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yes. Wow, that's a great pre Yom Kippur story.
Yeah.
Look at all the mitzvah notes. That's beautiful. Okay, so here's a mitzvah note. I had an unwholesome, impure desire. I identified it as such. And not only did I not act on it, because I would never act on it, but I dropped it from my mind as well. As soon as I understood it was not a productive thought. That's my mitzvah note.
Can it be like even
leaders
related, like patience with the kids?
Patience with the kids? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. You want to be boring, patience with the kids? No. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think it's interesting that I point this out because so many people have real deep shame specifically in this area, and when they do experience issues of an intimate nature, it has a tendency to really derail people. I don't want to get into a whole discussion about human sexuality according to Kabbalah, although we could have an entire discussion about that, but the Alter Rebbe identifies it as a unique source of self-loathing, and that which unfortunately really derails people, okay? However, you're correct. That's not the only type of inappropriate thought. An inappropriate thought could be like, my kid is so annoying, he's taking 10 minutes to put on his shoes, I want to scream at this kid. Now, I didn't scream at him, but I really felt like screaming at him. I felt like, you know, saying, what the heck's wrong with you? Okay, I didn't do it, but I felt like what kind of an awful mother am I that I wanted to scream at my kid, hey, what's wrong with you? Put on your shoes already. Okay, so that kind of a thing, the Alter Rebbe is saying here, don't hate yourself for having had such an impulse. Be humbly grateful that you were given the opportunity to do the mitzvah, the unique mitzvah of not giving in to that impulse. Because you can't do that mitzvah if you don't have the impulse. Tzaddikim can't do that mitzvah. They don't have the impulse, so they don't have the opportunity to do the mitzvah of not giving in to the impulse. Okay. Shamasiach daite mekayim lavzeh. So, when the person averts his mind from the impulse, he is actually performing a mitzvah. He is adhering to a prohibition of the Torah, one of the 365 don'ts. V'amr razal, and the sages have said, Yoshev le'avra veda, someone who just sits and doesn't do a sin, neistim le'schar kilo asa mitzvah, he is rewarded as if he had done a mitzvah. So don't come and be a Mr. Smarty Pants and say, well, that's not a real mitzvah because it's not one of the 248 positive commandments. It's only one of the 365 prohibitions. So it's not something I did. It's something that I didn't do. So how could I get proud about it? And he's saying, listen, you're being a smarty pants. The sages have told us very clearly that even refraining from a sin is considered in the Torah's eyes to be as equally valuable as doing a commandment. Okay. Val kein tzarich lismayach b'kiyam alav, kemei b'kiyam mitzvah saseh mamash. Therefore, you should rejoice in adhering to the prohibition just like you would rejoice in performing a positive commandment. In other words, where's your simcha shel mitzvah? Right? There's a concept called simcha shel mitzvah. Simcha shel mitzvah is, oh yay, I get to do a mitzvah. Like the Berditchever who couldn't sleep all night on the night of Sukkot because he was just staring at his lulav and he's waiting for the crack of dawn so he could run out to the sukkah and bench lulav at the first possible moment, right? Because he was so excited about the mitzvah. Yeah, it's such simcha shel mitzvah. And we all agree that that's a beautiful thing. Yeah? So where's your simcha shel mitzvah in being mekayim v'lei sasuru? Where's the joy that you get from doing God's will when you are beset by an inappropriate impulse and you ignore that inappropriate impulse? Why don't you get excited about that? You've just done a mitzvah. Mitzvahs aren't exciting to you? I don't understand. Either way, it doesn't make sense. If you're into mitzvahs, then get happy about that mitzvah. And if you're not happy about it, so apparently you're not so into mitzvahs, so why are you killing yourself over the fact that you wanted to do a sin? Like, you got to pick. You got to pick what's your worldview. You really care about mitzvahs? Okay, so be happy. You just did a mitzvah. Okay. The Al-Kain. No, we said that. The Adrabba. V'adrab. Okay, so he says v'adrab again. This is the second time he's saying v'adrab. The first time he said v'adrab, to the contrary, you should be happy, not sad. V'adrab, and now he's explaining, this is very interesting, this insight here. He's telling us the real cause for the sadness. He's saying, I don't buy it that your sadness is genuinely coming from a place of piety. Because if it were, like I just said, if you're so pious, that means you value mitzvahs. Well, if you value mitzvahs, so then be happy that you just did one. And the fact that you're not able to get happy about that mitzvah, the fact that not only you're not happy about that mitzvah, but you're ashamed that you were in a position to have to do that mitzvah, he says, I'll tell you what I really think it is. V'adrabba, ho'atzusi megasas ho'ruach. The sadness is coming from arrogance. She'ena makir mekeima, he doesn't know his place. What does it mean he doesn't know his place? Meaning you have spiritual delusions of grandeur. V'al kein yeder levavei al she'ena b'medregas tzaddik. That's why he feels bad that he's not on the level of a tzaddik. Tzaddik as we defined it in Tanya. So he's feeling bad. I had an impulse, an inappropriate impulse. I'm not a tzaddik. Shel tzaddikim bevade ein neflim lahem yehure shtus ke'elu. Because tzaddikim certainly are not beset by, he calls them foolish thoughts. They're not beset by such foolish thoughts. So he's sad. Oh no, I had an impulse that is inappropriate to act upon. Yeah, that means you're not a tzaddik. That's what you're sad about, that you're not a tzaddik? Ki ilo hoya makir mekemeshu rochag me'ed mebedregas tzaddik. If he were to recognize his place, his true standing, that he is far from the level of tzaddik, In fact, my friend, I think you would agree, if only you could be a Beinoni, as we've defined it in Tanya, someone with behavioral perfection, and not a Rasha, meaning someone who from time to time gives in behaviorally to his impulses. A filo shoachas, even for a moment, if you could take control. And as we've defined it, this is actually what we call the level of the Beinoni, and this is the mode of service of the Beinoni, somebody who is able to curb his impulses on a behavioral level. Not that he is free from the impulses. He has the impulses, but he's able to not act on them. We're continuing to describe the mechanics of a Beinoni. Someone who conquers the evil inclination and the thought that arises from the heart to the mind, and he completely averts his mind from it, and he pushes it away with two hands. He's describing that. With every push that he pushes away this inappropriate impulse from his thought, it has a cosmic ripple effect. It's not just a personal victory. He is actually subjugating the universal forces of negativity. One second, let's finish the sentence here. When he has his personal victory, that causes what he does down here is reciprocated on high. It subjugates the universal sitra achra, which arrogantly lifts its head above like an eagle. And basically what happens is he acts out what it says. I think this is a verse from Avadya, the prophet. Avadya, Obadiah, was a proselyte from Edom. He was an Edomite proselyte. He read a poem about that. Anyways, he was a Roman, and he became Jewish. And the Romans, the original Romans, were descended from Esav, Yaakov's brother Esav. So it's interesting, Avadya was given the merit of prophesizing about the downfall of his biological ancestors. Yeah. So Rome, which is the embodiment of Esav, is described as being haughty, and it says, if you lift yourself up like an eagle, I'm going to bring you down from there, says Hashem. Okay. So the point is that when you have your personal moment of struggle, think about the net gain. The net gain is by engaging in your little, your little isometric moral exercise where you're overcoming your own little internal resistance that actually has a cosmic ripple effect where you are bringing down the power. Bringing down meaning you're lowering the effectiveness, the hold that negativity has on the world in general. So, just to reframe this whole thing, this is what you're depressed about. You're depressed about the fact that you're not a tzaddik who gets to go through life without having any inappropriate impulses. Oh, boo-hoo-hoo. And instead, what do you have? You have the opportunity to do something whereby your personal moral victory is actually making the entire world a better place for all of us. And that's what you're crying about? Wait, will you, yeah.
Yeah, so after this whole exercise, is there any teshuva or introspection you're supposed to be doing about that initial thought?
No. Great question. No. The question is, what about the teshuva? What about the introspection of stock taking, cleaning it up? No. At least in this immediate context, no.
Is that an impulse thought?
So you're trying to figure out when it crosses the line from an impulse to an actual behavior. Right, because we said that if it crosses the line to an actual behavior, go see chapter 26. So you're saying, is plotting and scheming a plan how to do an Aveda, even though you haven't done any action, but it's completely mental, is that developed of a thought? Is that enough of a developed thought that crosses the line to the kinds of stuff that we deal with in chapter 26? Yeah, it is.
So then you would have to do Tshuva.
So then you would deal with it the way that we deal with it in chapter 26, which is, like we said, yes, there's a process of doing Tshuva, you make an appointment, you do a spiritual stock taking at the end of the day or at the end of the week. Yeah.
It sounds like the Alter Rebbe is like teaching us how to have chassidus on ourselves and think positively on ourselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And if you do that well, then naturally you can do that outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't even go there yet. But yes, you're right. You're 6 chapters too early. 5 chapters too early. Yes.
So it means like the darker a person's mind is, the more.
So you want to make an argument, you're asking, can we make the argument that this stuff could actually be scalable? That as gut is gut is besser nicht besser? That if you're telling me that overcoming an impulse has this effect, so then the darker the impulse, the greater the victory. Yeah.
His whole life,
he was
this huge impulse, and he just acted on, but at the same time, what
you
could accomplish in the world on his own by overcoming this is huge.
Yeah.
But aren't there two steps where you have the thought, you push the thought away, you have, and you don't do it. So that the positive things are two things. That you are able to push the thought away, and that you don't do it.
Right.
So if you keep going on and on and on in your mind, you don't do it.
Okay, so let's clarify. And you know what? If we continue, he will answer this question. But let me articulate the question. How frequently are you allowed to struggle with this thought before it becomes, you're not struggling with it anymore, just that's the way you're thinking? Like, at what point have you crossed the line, right? Okay, so let's continue, because he does answer this question.
Yeah, I just want to ask one thing too, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to know, are we supposed to aspire to becoming a Beinoni or a Tzaddik?
Are we supposed to aspire to become a Beinoni or a Tzaddik? Okay, so he just said Halavai Beinoni, that's an aspiration. Mm-hmm. Being a Beinoni is an aspiration. As we've discussed in earlier chapters of the book, Tzaddik is not on our agenda, right? Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but am I as a Rasha supposed to try and become a Beinoni?
Yeah, that's the whole premise of the book, is you're supposed to try to become a Beinoni. Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to say something. Yeah. When you talk about drawing the line, literally the line, there's people who can't control their impulses, and at that point, if they could just recognize that they need professional help.
Right. If somebody is neurologically incapable or for whatever biological reason of controlling an impulse, then that's not a moral issue.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. But like we say about a lot of things, it's not under your control to stop it, but it's under your control to seek proper treatment.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
That line, if you can at least recognize that you can't do it alone, and you have to go for professionalism.
Right. Very good. Yeah. Important. It's an important note. Okay. All right. Let's continue a little bit here. So we have this ripple effect. Ukemeshe hiflig bezeya parshas truma daf kuf chav ches begedel nachas ruach lefanav yisborach kadeskaf yisitra achre lesato. The Zohar speaks in very praiseworthy, glowing terms about the incredible pleasure Hashem has when somebody overcomes their own personal challenges. So again, is this about your glory or is this about Hashem's glory? If it's about Hashem's glory, then what do you care if you have to do the dirty work of being a person who exercises impulse control over inappropriate desires? You're accomplishing something great in the world, so stop being so self-conscious. Distalik yikodet de kutcha brichla ela akula yate mishivcha achra vistalkusa do yate mekula v'chulu. He says, actually, there's a unique effect in the world that when you overcome an inappropriate desire, that has a greater effect than any other praise of Hashem. V'lochein, therefore, al yipa lev adam alav v'le yere levavim me'ed. A person should not feel bad. He should not be overly distraught. Gam im yeh kein kol yomov b'milchamazu. Even if he will be engaged his entire life, all of his days, in this war. Does that answer your question? His whole life may be spent. It's not something, oh yeah, I once had a negative impulse. I remember that. I overcame it. That was rough. No, he's doing it constantly. Kol Yomov. This sounds so depressing. Kol Yomov, all of his days. He says, yeah. Ki ulai lekach nivra. Maybe that's what he was created for. V'zeis aveidase lekafilisit rachatamid. And this is his way of serving Hashem, by overcoming the negativity. Maybe that's the way you serve Hashem. I'm not saying it is, but if you're finding that that's your experience, don't question the value of such a life. To the contrary, embrace it. This is how you are productive. This is how you are serving Hashem. This is how you are creating a net gain of good in the universe. Now, not everybody has that mission, but if you find that that is your mission, or you go through a period of life where that appears to be your mission, it's certainly not a cause to be distraught. If your feelings are coming from a legitimately spiritual place. Of course, if it's coming from arrogance, then we can't help you. If it's coming from arrogance, yeah, it is pretty shameful to be the guy with the dirty mind, and yeah, you're going to be all broken up about it. But if you're coming from a legitimately humble place where you say, you know what, it's not about me, it's about Hashem, apparently, I didn't ask for this, I didn't sign up for this, but apparently this is the way that I'm serving Hashem right now. And it's more than just once a day. It's more than 5 times a day. It's more than 10 times a day. And it's more than once a week. Apparently this is my constant way of serving Hashem. This is just life. This is my normal. Okay, fine. Then that's what it is. Now I'm not saying that that's for everyone, but certainly there are people that is the way that they serve Hashem, and we're normalizing that if the shoe fits, you know. And there's no shame in that. To the contrary, if you're feeling shame in that, it's only coming from arrogance. If you're truly embracing that mitzvahs are for Hashem, not for us, for Hashem, mm-hmm. Then what does it bother you if your mitzvah is to write a Sefer Torah or to curb your inappropriate lustful desires when you walk down the street? What difference does it make to you which mitzvah you're doing? You're doing a mitzvah.
Would the rabbi say that despair is an avera?
Despair leads to worse, because it could lead to all the avedas. And that's what we're trying to overcome here, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Critical over themselves, and that's a consistent thought, or I'm giving an example, but some sort of aspect
that would overcoming that, would that be within the same realm of that fight, that struggle is in itself?
Okay, so you're asking an excellent question. I'm going to re-articulate the question. Your question, and tell me if I'm changing it too much, because I know what's happening in the chapter, and sort of I'm sort of biased. The question is, now that you've convinced us how powerful it is to exercise this type of impulse control, I'm wondering if we could generalize that to things beyond just overtly immoral impulses. What about other impulses that maybe are not so clearly wrong, but I would like to overcome them? I would like to exert some type of mastery over them. Would that also have some type of a benefit? Is that what you're sort of asking?
That is exactly my question.
That is what you're asking.
That is what I'm asking, okay. Except when you say that's not overtly wrong, meaning what we've seen in the last chapters in Tanya, that being joyful is very important. So let's say...
In and of itself, by itself,
right.
It's not overtly clear-cut. You're not allowed to do this. Right. Okay, yeah, obviously, any type of stinking thinking is going to undermine our entire Avodas Hashem. We know that. But I'm saying, in and of itself, is this thing, can I say that it's categorically immoral to do this or to think this or to want this? No. But I would like to gain some self-control over it. Okay, so, yeah. I think it was chosen as a not as a specific example, but more as a general example. So I'm gonna answer the question before we're about to get into it. This is literally where we're heading right now. I'll answer it before we even get into it. The answer is yes, that this is so powerful. The mechanics of this ripple effect that we described is so powerful that, yeah, we can, once we learn this, we can go and use it on all types of things and exercise self-control even in areas that are not inherently sinful were we to indulge. Okay? Yeah? Okay, you're asking a very practical question.
I'm saying,
how do you avert the thought?
Yeah, you fill yourself with Hashem, you fill yourself with spirituality. Like, mm-hmm. what do you do in that moment? Because all you're saying is, had a thought, I didn't act on it, but where did the thought go now?
Yeah, where does it go? Yeah.
Like, what are we replacing that thought with?
So I was up till 5:30 a.m. last night watching videos on how to make your tinnitus go away. So, yeah, basically like that. It's a ringing in the ears that's constant, and it's not actually a real sound. It's the brain noticing stimulus that it should be ignoring, and it's maddening, and it drives people insane. And to one of the questions on the questionnaire that I took at the audiology clinic was like, Does the ringing in your ears drive you to suicidal thoughts? Okay, there's a reason why that's a question. Okay, at any rate, so how do you avert your mind from a thought? You know what? Whatever works. I was watching these videos till 5:30 in the morning. But one of the guys was saying he plays video games. Now,
that's
numbing. What? Sometimes that's what you got to do.
But also, isn't there a concept that the more you work on this, the stronger you get?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't want to give you false hopes. Listen, let's be realistic. Let's be realistic here. Some desires are just sort of like base human nature, and to a certain extent, they're ever-present. They're ubiquitous. And the best, no, certain things, yeah, you can get over it. You could say, you know what, I used to go crazy about hot fudge sundaes, and I grew out of that. Yeah, I don't want to say that there isn't such a thing as growing beyond certain things. But there are other things, it's pretty ubiquitous, and you just learn how to live your life in spite of it. And that's called overcoming. That's called averting. Averting is move on, take a step forward, do the next right thing, act as if this wasn't forefront in your mind, and eventually it will be, effectively speaking, as if it weren't there. Yeah, yeah, getting neutral, yeah. Like, not really regarding it as much. By the way, that's one of the things with the tinnitus is that you hate it, and the more you hate it, so it's caused by stress. So the more it stresses you, and the more you regard it as a negative, it's very interesting. It's a good parenting tip. It says that when, I was thinking about my parenting course when I was watching these videos, because it's saying like, well, when you identify it as undesirable and you say to yourself, this is undesirable, stop paying attention to it, you're actually identifying it as emotionally important. So you're actually hearing it more. Like right now, I'm barely hearing it. Why? Because I'm very engaged in this discussion. So I'm conscious that I have it, but it barely, like Baruch Hashem, right now is like a moment of relief. Why? Because I'm very focused on this conversation. It's not that it's actually louder or quieter. It's not a real sound anyway, but I'm focused on this conversation. Yeah, it's maddening. Yeah, we need more, basically, yeah. So yeah, for my sanity, I need to be giving Tanya classes 24 hours a day. Yeah, so what we're saying, that when you regard it as so undesirable, oh, I hate this! You're actually telling your brain, and they say it's happening on a limbic level. Basically, it's fight or flight. So your brain is just saying, well, what's important information for me to know in order to survive? Well, if you're raging so much about this stimulus, it must be important information for me to know about. No, I want my brain to filter out this noise. Just like they give an example, a guy like me with sensory issues, they said, it's like you don't notice your socks on your feet. I'm like, well, till now. Right? Okay. And then like for an hour, I was like, and I wasn't even wearing socks, and that was the worst thing. But the point, what we're saying is that when you regard it as, would you say getting neutral? Getting neutral, when you regard it as, no, that's just my condition. It is what it is. That's the best attitude to make it become less intrusive. But when you get all upset about it, and this is basically what he's saying. It's interesting how Shkocha brought this. What he's saying is when the person, coming from a place of piety, and maybe even he thinks, maybe he never learned chapter 27 of Tanya, so he actually thinks he's being genuinely pious. But he's raging against it. He's like, oh, I hate these thoughts. I hate these impulses. These are so disgusting. I hate these. So the rage and the hate and the disgust isn't making it go away. You're giving it attention. And then the biggest negative effect is you're internalizing that hatred. You're hating yourself, and then it's undermining all of your service of Hashem because you cannot do anything well if you're not joyful. And that's why it's terrible when a teacher says you should be ashamed of yourself. That is right. Or a parent says you should be ashamed of yourself. Or anyone. Yeah, we should never. Okay, let's wrap up, yeah? Yeah.
We think our mind is half there, but we have control of what we think.
It's, yeah, I wish that were true for me. You can't have two thoughts at the same time. I could have like 10 thoughts at the same time. I can't do two things at the same time. Yeah, I can. I can't do two things at once. I can only do one thing, but I could think 10 things at a time. I can do it right now. You can't see my thoughts. No, no, no. I can overlap. I can layers. I can overlap them. Yeah. What? I don't think it's binary. I don't think it's a switch. I think it's a degree of importance. And that's what we're talking about here is, do I want to give importance to my impulses, or do I want to recognize them for what they are, background noise, and I want to give importance to my behaviors. My behaviors should be of primary importance to me. Okay, let's wrap up here, and we're in the middle of chapter 27. We'll continue in a few weeks.